A new farm shop focused on organic, locally sourced produce has opened in a village near Darlington. The Greedy Goat Deli opened in Howarth in April, and now, 3 months on, owner Francis Ward has welcomed customers to its brand new farm shop, stocked with fresh local goods. The shop opened its doors on Thursday, June the 18th, to a warm response from the community. Gemma, who works at the farm shop, said, "We had a really good response Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday. We didn't know what to expect, but I think with the wines and beers it was quite helpful as it was around Father's Day. We have quite a lot of wines and beers and some hampers, but everything's been really popular. We've had great feedback because we've got eggs from our own farm, local honey, and a couple of local brands from people in the village. We get fresh sourdough twice a week. We stock Acorn Dairy, all their milks, organic butter, fresh orange juice, so it's quite local and people like that. The plans don't stop there, as the team are set to open a restaurant in a few weeks' time." Gemma said, "Hopefully in the next 5 or 6 weeks, the back restaurant will be open, which is a full sit-down restaurant, and it's going to be open for breakfast, brunch and lunch to begin with." Head chef Richie Tunian said, "We're doing a British and European farm-to-fork menu. I use ingredients from Italy, Spain and Eastern Mediterranean, but I also concentrate on seasonal British produce. We are going as organic as possible, using produce from our own farm as much as we can, and topping up from other organic suppliers. Using local produce is our number one priority. We want to use as few air miles as possible on the food. For now, the deli offers a range of items, including breakfast oat, yoghurt and kefir pots, cake, pastries and scones, salad pots, sandwiches and toasties. The Greedy Goat can be found on Church Row in Howarth-on-Tees."
Arrests over suspected stolen bikes. Councillors have praised residents and police after two people were arrested following reports of nuisance riders in Darlington. Local councillor Nick Wallace said the arrests came days after he challenged two balaclava-clad riders on Salters Lane. Police also seized two suspected stolen motorbikes. Officers later raided an address in Gilsland Crescent where two people were arrested on suspicion of handling stolen goods, and two bikes believed to have been stolen were recovered. Councillor Wallace, Labour member for Horton and Springfield, and fellow ward members Chris McEwen and Dawn Storr said the outcome was an outstanding result for the community. Durham Police said officers from the North Road and East neighbourhood policing teams carried out the warrant in the Horton and Springfield area after receiving excellent community-led intelligence. An adult woman and a teenage boy were arrested on suspicion of handling stolen goods.
Councillors have called for a stricter cap on the number of resident parking permits per household under a new scheme. New draft proposals revealed by Darlington Borough Council would allow households in new resident parking zones, RPZs, to hold a maximum of 3 permits. Some properties already holding more than 3 would be allowed to keep them, provided their permits do not lapse for more than 3 months. However, Green Party councillor Matthew Snedker has urged the authority to reduce the limit to 2 permits per household, arguing it would be fairer for residents competing for limited parking spaces. Speaking at a council meeting, Mr. Snedka said, "We need to balance the needs of all residents in a street, not just a household that happens to own a lot of cars." A recurring theme mentioned to me as a ward councillor is fairness. If a household has more than two cars with permits, they are taking an unfair share of the carriage race space. I think there's a strong feeling among residents that three permits would be too much. My recommendation would be to go for a maximum of two permits. Green Party councillor Bryony Holroyd also backed the suggestion, saying, "I would emphatically support having a maximum of two permits. They can park elsewhere if they have more cars."
A Darlington Music Festival headlined by the likes of Five and Mark Armand has been cancelled, citing rising costs and other local events. Discovery Festival, which was due to be held at Mowden Park on August the 8th and 9th, has been pushed back to the same weekend next year, organisers have announced. The event was due to host 80s Calling on Saturday, headlined by one half of synth-pop duo Soft Cell, Mark Armand, followed by DJs Sigma and The Wanted 2.0 on the Sunday. Bosses of the event said that the rising costs and other events, such as Radio 1's big weekend in Sunderland in May, has had a huge impact. It said this has meant that organisers are not able to deliver the experience you have previously enjoyed with us and we believe you deserve. Ticket holders can now either get a full refund if they can't attend the 2027 dates, August the 7th and August the 8th, or can hold on to their ticket and get a free extra complimentary ticket for any day of the festival next year. A statement from organisers said, "It is with great disappointment that we must announce the postponement of Discovery Festival in Darlington 2026. When we planned this event a year ago, none of us could have anticipated the current economic situation and the impact it would have on our lives, affecting everyone's disposable income. Despite our best efforts, the combination of rising costs and other events announced locally, particularly BBC One's big weekend, which has had a huge impact on the festival, and means that this year we are not able to deliver the experience you have previously enjoyed with us and we believe you deserve. Having exhausted all potential alternatives, we have reached the heartbreaking decision to postpone the festival until the 7th and 8th of August 2027.
A neighbour has told how an 8-year-old boy was left an absolute mess after his face was mauled in a horrific dog attack in Newton Aycliffe. The youngster was reportedly pinned down by a Japanese Akita while it was tied up outside a home on Guthrum Place just after 6 p.m. on Sunday, June 21st. He was taken to hospital for treatment after suffering facial injuries, but is understood to have since returned home. A nearby resident, who was asked not to be named, described the attack as horrific. She said, "It happened in the car park near their house. I feel so sorry for the little lad. He must have been terrified. It pinned him to the floor. His face was an absolute mess afterwards. He's had to have surgery on it, and it's still so swollen from it all. The whole thing is just horrific." Durham Police has confirmed the dog has since been seized, while inquiries continue into the circumstances of the attack. A spokesperson said, "We were called to reports of an 8-year-old boy being bitten by a dog after stopping to pet it outside an address in Guthrum Place, Newton Aycliffe, just after 6 p.m. on Sunday, June 21st. The boy suffered an injury to his cheek and was taken to hospital where he remains. An investigation is ongoing. The incident is one of four dog attacks reported in the town in recent days. Officers said they had also received a report of an elderly owner letting go of her two Labradors on a walk after they became uncontrollable, with the dogs biting a woman on the arm. In a separate incident, a woman was bitten on the arm by a friend's crossbreed bulldog while visiting her home. A fourth report involved a cyclist being bitten on the back of the leg after an Alsatian was allowed to roam off the lead while being walked. Police said the victims in the other three incidents suffered minor injuries and investigations remain ongoing.
So that concludes this week's news. Now it's time for the magazine. It's been edited by Margaret Ray, and the items you will hear include Heartbeat, author's beloved JAG set for poignant reunion, Remarkable Riverside Churches, For All the Tea in China, and Does This Ring Any Bells?
Heartbeat, author's beloved JAG set for poignant reunion by Gavin Engelbrecht, D&S Times. A beloved Jaguar once owned by Heartbeat author Nicholas Rea is set to make an emotional return to Gotham this month. The return of the classic car will bring together Rea's family for a poignant reunion nearly a decade after they last saw it. The late author's cherished Jaguar Mark II will be at the Heartbeat Vehicle Rally, which takes place annually in Gotham, known to fans of the show as Aidensfield, this weekend. Nicholas Rea, whose real name was Peter N. Walker, was the creator of the Constable books that inspired the long-running ITV drama Heartbeat. He first spotted the sky blue Jaguar in 1975. His daughter, Sarah Walker, who took on his countryman's diary column for the Darlington and Stockton Times after his death, said, "It cast a spell on him that lasted the rest of his life." Like every love story, it had its ups and downs. It handled like a tank, sounded like a juggernaut, and was wholly unreliable. It swallowed money in petrol and maintenance, said Mr. Rea in one of his interviews. The car failed its MOT in 1979, with Rea pledging to get it fixed once he could afford it. It would languish in his garage for the next 15 years. Heartbeat's first episode aired in 1992, the year Sarah got engaged. "I told Dad I wanted to be driven to my wedding in the Jaguar," she said. "Dad promised to make it happen." The show's success meant he could finally get the repairs done, and on May the 14th, 1994, Sarah sat with her dad in the back of his beloved car being driven to the church. "It was one of the best moments of my life," said Sarah. Sadly, after a diagnosis of prostate cancer, Mr. Rea died on April the 21st, 2017. Believing they could not look after the car properly, the family made the difficult decision to sell it. Sarah said, "Watching it drive away was like losing my dad all over again. I consoled myself by thinking the new owner could cherish it as we had, but I was wrong." Heartbeat Vehicle Rally organiser Lee Jones later spotted the car on Facebook, having been bought in poor condition by Jaguar enthusiast Richard James. Sarah said, "Seeing the before pictures broke my heart. It was awful. Mr. James was unaware of the vehicle's pedigree until he found a Heartbeat pen under the back seats during restoration. He has since named the car Grace and will reunite it with the family at the rally."
remarkable riverside churches. This is an article by Chris Lloyd from the Darlington and Stockton Times. Next weekend, on Saturday the 4th of July, four riverside churches set in scenic locations on the banks of the Tees throw their doors open and invite people to come and have a look and soak up their history. They each have roots going back centuries and connections to the great local landowning families of the past, who involved at least two of them in extraordinary scraps. The riverside churches of Hurworth, Low Dinsdale, Gursby and Middleton St George are open from 10:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. with refreshments being served in all but Gursby, and visitors being encouraged to have their cards stamped to show they have made it to all four. Here's a quick guide to the churches. All Saints Church, Hurworth. All Saints was so substantially rebuilt in 1831 that only six pillars remain from its Norman beginnings, but plenty of fascinating ancient details survive, like the four coats of arms on the tower, which recall the days when the Neville, Tailbois, Dacre and Greystock families dominated the district. Inside the church, two 12th century knights, Lords Dacre and Greystock, sleep in stone, while outside the church door is a massive piece of stone with the initials GS carved deeply in it. This is the last resting place of Colonel Gordon Skelly, who died on November the 30th, 1828, having spent his last years in Pilmore House, a large farmhouse that is now beneath Rockcliffe Hall Hotel and Spa. He was the naval hero of the 1799 siege of Seringapatam, a massive engagement in India, in which the British pitched 50,000 men against the 30,000 of the Indian leader Tipu Sultan. There are many other fascinating stories buried in the churchyard, like that of William Emerson, the internationally esteemed mathematician, who covered the village in sundials, whose Latin inscription on his table tomb is now barely legible. With headstones tumbling down the churchyard towards the River Tees, All Saints is a truly lovely place to explore. St John the Baptist Church in Low Dinsdale. Another quiet, idyllic spot close to the Tees, with an old stone mounting block outside, the Lych Gate, and in springtime surrounded by daffodils. There's been a church here since the 7th century, but this one was built in 1195. In Low Dinsdale, it served one of the smallest parishes in the country, which for centuries was the seat of the Surtees family, one of the most powerful families in the county. The church was restored in 1876 by the Darlington architect J.W. Pritchett, without losing its ancient charm. In fact, built into the porch is the grave cover, with a cross carved into it of Gosilnus Surtees, who died in 1366. This is said to be the only cross slab in Durham that can be accurately dated. All Saints Church, Gursby. This church is in a fabulous elevated position overlooking the Tees and on the opposite bank, Sockburn Hall, the home of the Blackett family for centuries. Beside Sockburn Hall is a Saxon church that was surprisingly important 1,000 years ago, once an appalling dragon had been sliced to death by brave knights wielding a big sword. But in 1838, Henry and Theophania Blackett, who fed up of local people traipsing past their hall to worship in the church, so they closed it down and illegally shut all the footpaths leading to it. Instead, they built a new, simple church on the Gursby side of the river, which the local people could attend out of their sight. They even pulled much of the Saxon church down to make it look, from their hall windows, like a romantic ruin. Henry was buried in the ruin in 1856. Local people complained. The Darlington Highway Board took Theophania to Durham Assizes in 1867 and 1868, and she was twice ordered to reopen the footpaths. She refused. So the board took her to the court of the Queen's Bench in London. By now, legal costs were mounting. Theophania had the Blackett fortune to support her, but the local authority was facing financial difficulty until it devised a master plan. It levied a special rate on the inhabitants of the township of Sockburn to pay for the Battle of the Footpaths. The bigger the inhabitants' landholding, the more they paid. And the largest landholder in Sockburn was Theophania, and so she discovered she was paying the board's costs to fight herself. Days before the London hearing on the 21st of January 1869, she made a conciliatory offer, but she was found to be guilty and ordered, on the pain of a £400 fine, to build a public bridge over the Tees at her own expense so the people could reach the new church at Gursby. Theophania quickly complied, and visitors to Gursby can still cross her bridge directly beneath the church. But really, Theophania had won. She was able to enclose her Sockburn loop of the river, which contained the ruined Saxon church and the spot where the dragon was killed, in a shroud of secrecy that persists to this day.